and I had to learn by doing. And so that served me very well because it was really in the field. You learned how things really worked on the, you know, in practice rather than in theory. So I think today, to answer your question a little more definitively, you can do anything from joining a company today and get into a lower level position and learn from your, you know, your peers to the move the way up. A little bit similar to what it was in the old hacker days, where you would join a group of people that would eventually show you as the new kid how to do things. You know, you guys, I know, came from like a gamer world. It's not too distant from that. It's a very similar culture. There's a little bit of an apprenticeship and guilding effectively of how you come up in the ranks over time. If you're respected through the community, that's the old way of doing it. I still think is the best, but no reason I don't begrudge guys that want to go down the path of getting a professional certification, get all the letters after their names. I don't have a single letter behind my name, to be clear. So 27 years later, after doing this, I don't have any certifications that I sort of put out in front first. I just have all my experience that I've had doing it. So, you know, different worlds, different structure, different folks in a lot of ways. I think just again, today, to your point, cybersecurity is such a massive industry now. And the corporate giants have gotten involved with it. Wall Street's gotten involved with it. So now there's more money than ever. So it's attracting a lot of folks into it, for better or worse, to be honest with you. I will say there's a downside to that as well. But hey, we need help. I'll be honest, there's a little pitch to the industry as a whole. There's not enough of us out there, and we got a lot of adversaries and very few defenders. So anyone that wants to join it, rock and roll, and ping me, I'll be happy to help.
And it's funny you mentioned that we need help. Right now the government's literally trying to craft a bill to allow $15.6 billion to help improve cybersecurity by training, obviously, infrastructure. Yeah. So it's out there, ladies and gentlemen. If you guys want to jump into a career path that you're like, it's new, it's different, cybersecurity is it's something I would say is a developing landscape. So take a risk. Obviously, it's not guaranteed. Because even like Kyrene said, there's letters or like certificates behind it. They don't all mean the same thing in terms of representation as to what you're capable of doing. You may have an entry level like CCIE, and then all of a sudden you get switched over from policy to actual like field testing or life hacktivism. Like, there's a lot of things in this just new genre of a discipline, and it's a lot. So
And for someone who's like in the industry and working on it daily, how much of a fear is there, or of a worry is there, for like cyber espionage? Because we know that's the way that, you know, every government and every company is really going forward in the future, or even now currently. So is that a worry? Is that something you see as a problem?
Oh yeah. If you're talking about for the customers that I deal with, meaning large enterprise, you know, and even sometimes small to medium companies, absolutely. This is now becoming a boardroom conversation, which it never was, you know, even 5 years ago. So there's, you know, a lot more talk among leadership about the problem. What's interesting, and to kind of just kind of add a finer point on what you guys are talking about with people that want to get in it, it's an exciting part of information security, or information IT as a whole, if you want to call it that broadly. It's more exciting than the average infrastructure jobs, or, you know, someone that does admin work. And, you know, I'm not saying website design and things like that don't have their benefits and perks, right? Or game design, for God's sake, from a technical perspective. But if you're interested in something that changes almost on a day-to-day basis, cybersecurity is exactly right. You know, Void was talking about it being the government needs that help. You know, I think what's interesting is I get a lot of questions, and we're welcome to drill down into this later, whether you should work for government or you should work for private industry. And there's really good answers around that, I think, quite honestly. But I will say this as a follow-on point to your question. When you first asked me, I thought you were asking if there was fear for guys like us, me, you know, and the answer for me specifically is yes. For a lot of folks, because they're in a defensive position, they're only doing work to protect the organizations. They don't really introduce risk to themselves. However, with me, and if you guys were interested in talking about it a little bit more, I actually take over the infrastructure the adversary set up. So I really piss them off. I break into their environments, figure out who they're impacting, and ultimately disrupt their cash flow and their ability to continue their work and illuminate what they're doing from the inside, which ruins their whole process up to that point in many cases. So I build a lot of enemies doing this. So if you're faint of heart, I wouldn't recommend doing what I do specifically, but happy to share.
And let's go back to how common these types of attacks are, right? If we're talking about like website vulnerabilities, we're talking about servers that probably haven't been updated or patched. You get your door foot through the door through those methods, and now you're inside their corporate system. Obviously, you don't want to be like, I'm just doing an attack right now. It's more of, I'm sitting here waiting to gather information, right? That's how you get financial information, access information, any potential planning and any new products and stuff like that. That's a good way to sabotage. That obviously damages any of their infrastructure. They have to reestablish it, reorganize. That takes time, which is delay and which is cost of money. There's all of these things that cybersecurity attacks cause that people don't understand, right? We're talking about the government, how we had the pipeline, gas pipeline out in the East Coast a couple months back. We talked about a recent water distribution plant that got hacked and was blackmailed, but it was a different water plant that got hacked, efficiently killing out the ransom they were asking for because they already leaked the information because it was the wrong plant. There's a lot of these things that are happening, and you know what? It starts with little innocent things sometimes, like, oh, we're careless. Here's an email I clicked on it, you know, or a default password you have not changed in 10 years, which is also not a reliable thought of process for security. Like, there's a ton of things.
You're right. You're right. And then, you know, kind of also adding a level of compartmentalization or siloing this, there's the cyber criminal groups, like you're talking about, Boyd, that are they're more motivated by financial wins. Ransomware operators like Conti that took over Costa Rican government recently. I think that was what, you know, 3 months ago.
Yeah, that was.
You know, and what's unbelievable about it is that they're getting so brazen and so capable. They're taking on countries. You know, you think about that. That wasn't a company. That was a country. That was a government, right? You know. So, but then you have the other side of it, which is the nation state actors. These are the intelligence services of foreign national countries that are either adversarial or not in some cases. And those are extremely motivated but highly disciplined, well-funded operations that have less to do with maybe financial wins. They're more about influence campaigns. They're more about intellectual property theft and all that. Now, I say that as in there as if it sounds like it's separate. There's a lot of crossover with those, and a
There
lot of people
is.
don't.
One of my favorite things is when the Ukraine war started with Russia, one thing that was unprecedented before ever was they opened up a campaign to the world. Hey, can you guys help us attack Russia through hacks? You know, and that was obviously very concerning, right? Because now you have other states, other nations participating against Russia. All and they're throughout the world, right? But they're cities or states or countries were not in war with Russia. They, in fact, like the US could be like, we're ignoring this, but they could be a lone activist inside the US acting out against that. And that there's so many like implications with that. Like, is that a threat of war? Is that an attack? Like, there's this changes the landscape of how wars are being directed. So again, like when we say it grows, it does. It potentially has changed altogether. And the crossover saying, well, your country did this, that has political ramifications. Even though it was an individual doing things. So it's a lot. It's scary because it's grown so big so fast and people take advantage of it all the time. But the best thing we can say for cybersecurity is take care of yourself. Like, protect yourself as best as possible, and only give access as required. Limit everything.
So
Absolutely.
as time moves forward, we know that the world becomes increasingly dependent on digital, right? Everything is either integrated at some form or some level, but it's also the hardware. Everything runs on some kind of software, right? So even like you said, the water services can be shut down remotely. Electric power grids can be you can disrupt an entire country as mentioned, right? And we haven't seen the full effects of what it can do in America, right? We can only imagine a scenario where things go wrong and something like a shutdown, like what happened at the early stages of COVID. And if a shutdown happened like that, everyone's stuck at home and everything goes down, that's complete chaos that can be created. That's a real fear, I think, for myself when I think about those type of scenarios. There's not really much of a backup, especially the more you're cutting like landlines so you can have digital, you know, access to phone service from via satellite rather than using the old, you know, connections. If somebody is a disgruntled employee, we know that the economy is not as great as it could be. We know that right now a lot of companies are posting their third quarter, you know, their third quarter financial results, and the plan is to stabilize, is they're going to be laying off employees. So give or take, you have an employee that has access to a sensitive system, disgruntledly gets laid off or something happens, they don't do their you know, they don't dot their I's or cross their T's. This person accesses that power grid or that service that they have access to, and that could be the domino effect. You know, you never know who and what can start it. Of course, other governments would benefit from it, but even within our own borders, we don't really know what can happen if we don't follow security protocols. So when I mentioned earlier, there's fear of, like, is that something that people within your group and your community fear, like black hat, white hat hackers can easily switch places depending, you know, if they have the correct enticement, whether it be they buy into a political ideology or they buy in to just a financial bribe. Is that something that even within the community, a contingency plan, has that ever been spoken about?
It's talked about plenty. You know, I'll bring up something super relevant headline news lately, the Twitter situation, where the takeover of those validated accounts, if you remember, that happened, and the entire community was like, oh wow, it's a nation state, they must have found a way in. It was this big long back and forth forever, and it was a teenager that had properly bribed an internal employee at a Twitter. Simple as that. It was back to good old human intelligence, effectively, from, you know,
social engineering.
And, you know, it blew everyone's mind because it was like, wow, if they're that fragile, that, you know, and nothing against a teenager, I think they're the most brilliant sometimes in the world. But my point is, you know, that capability done well can take down a mammoth organization like Twitter. And now, of course, this thing that's coming out in the news last week that I've been doing a lot of talking about, which is the disclosures that were delivered by a really well-known friend of mine, actually, that worked there as the head of security, and he's now submitted this massive, massive document. It's like an 85-page document of failures.
So that was he was currently the CTO of Twitter at the time, correct? When he did this audit for them.
Head of security, I think, was his actual title. So, like, he overarched all of the security pieces. Yeah.
Because I've heard a bit of the news on this, where it's like he went in, did an audit. He's like, these are these concerns. And obviously the CEO stepped down at the time. And then the new CEO came in and he was even less transparent than the previous one.
Right.
And he's like, I need you to hide this, this, and this. Had a third party audit team come in to say, contradict or reduce his analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, like, just essentially throw him under the bus. And then they try to sue him, from what I understand.
Yeah.
But he's like, he's a very reputable source in the community, right? So it's like, you're going to say someone, it's like Chef Gordon showed up to a restaurant and said, this is terrible, the worst tasting food of my life, this is broken. And you're like, oh no, well, Chef Gordon's lying to you. It's unheard of. But again, I think this came out at the right time, because now that Elon was out there calling him out and Twitter was saying no, well, people are like, well, this isn't Twitter's fault. It's literally, he's giving you information. And obviously the same requirement that we were saying is like, well, if the information is accurate, then Elon Musk is in the wrong. But at this point, it doesn't sound like Twitter was being straightforward to Musk either, which is something he's definitely going to use with his lawyers to get out of that, paying that $46 billion purchase.
Exactly. And you know, to your point about the reputable nature of Mudge, I don't really call him by that's his hacker name, and Mudge is really, really well known, and he's also someone that has got the tenure in the industry. He was testifying in Congress 25 years ago. You know, he was a kid, long red hair back then, working, you know, as part of Loft, you know, talking about the failures of a much broader system to the congressional group that didn't even know how to use their own cell phones. Now, yet again, all these years later, this is not an individual that cares about spotlights. He's not looking for 50 minutes of fame. And, you know, you don't even need to be a friend of his to know that. You can go do your own homework and watch his reputation over the years. And he actually came into Twitter where he chose to come in and do something really good under Jack Dorsey at the time. So this new CEO was, to your point, Boyd, I think he was the CTO of Twitter that then got elevated into the CEO role after Dorsey left. So he already had this grudge, effectively. That's not an uncommon thing. Security practitioners come in, and their job is to essentially point out all the failures that exist here, which usually means someone's job sometimes. It means certainly some humiliation. So you build a lot of enemies, unfortunately, internally and externally. So I'm not surprised what happened, but it's really good for the world to understand that this is an individual that has nothing to gain from disclosing this. And furthermore, he did it the right way. He communicated to the leadership that they ignored him. And then they're like, I have no other choice but to submit a complaint to the SEC. He didn't go to the media first. He went to the proper channels for a public company that you would do.
The thing is, you can't understate when someone says, this is wrong.
Right.
They told me to do this. I told them they were wrong. And this, just because they didn't like the answer, they're like, they're trying to invalidate everything he's done, which again also is, I would say, very distasteful, because it seems like you were just going to use them as their clout to be like, this is a good person to have on our back. But when he's doing his job and you're like, you know what, you should not say that. That's silencing and, you know, undermining exactly what their position is. It's
exactly what I'll say one more thing on this, which is just as it relates to the broader community and what we've been talking about, and back to Z's question about, do we have customers that are scared? They're scared and they're worried and they're terrified. They're going to have a situation either, like you said, with a disgruntled employee or, you know, some breach that happens that they now have to deal with. But I'll tell you, as much as there's a fear factor, they generally will not preemptively do anything until something happens. They just won't spend the money. Right. So the number one problem we have is people usually wait until there's a compelling event to take action. And usually then you're doing a mop up rather than a preemptive limitation of damage. So the sad part about the situation is it's gotten bad, but not quite bad enough, I think, honestly, for the pain levels to be where they start saying, okay, that's it. We're going to start spending a ton of money preemptively on this kind of stuff. It's always human nature kicks in pretty heavily here where they just say, that's everyone else. That's not me. And it's like, nah, not quite. You may think you're a small company. You're not a big company that has all this targeted data that someone may want, but you're a conduit as a small company to these bigger companies. We start hearing about supply chain attacks, which is a big deal these days.
Well, like talking about the DoorDash database leak that got hacked, it's because it was tied to a Twilio service. And if you use Twilio, it's like a messaging platform you can use as a backend. That ties into other platforms people are using, their APIs, other websites, right? Like you could use it for like a chat box scenario. Yeah. You don't know you have that built into your web design, because you outsource it to a front end, but now their vulnerability leads directly to your database. That's a problem, right? That's an access issue, and sometimes people don't audit. And I know everyone's scared of an audit, but it's just a word to tell you, we're checking up on stuff. And a cybersecurity position isn't, oh, shit happened, fix it for me. That's a tech service situation. Mm-hmm. A cybersecurity situation is proactive. It's always being up to date, always looking, always scanning, always notifying. You know, you get notifications when the bank says, hey, you paid this something that looks suspicious, right? That's what a cybersecurity does. It's not the, hey, by the way, let me undo that for you. No, that's the service part. Okay, that's when you go find out, okay, why this happened, that's the cybersecurity. But undoing those changes, that's the tech service. And people don't see it the same way. Yes, it's under the same umbrella, but it's not the same thing, right? One's like, I'm your advisor, I'm your consultant, this is what we should do. We're not going to force you to do it. But when you come back to us saying, hey, this is what has to be done, they're going to be, don't be surprised that the premium cost of that is over the top when you could have just had a constant maintenance for this.
That's right. That's exactly it.
When you look at this again, to the only way you can really not have fear is if you have a solution for it. So in the community, thinking about preemptive things that can be done. Again, most companies don't want to spend the capital on it because they just don't see the ROI on it. Or maybe they know about it, but they just, again, it's not worth it until it happens, like you said. Mm-hmm. Is there a baseline default plan that you can bring to a company and say, well, you know, we can tailor it to you, but here's the basic recommendations we can do other than like informing your staff. Here's some of the things that we can do on the server end that we can maybe make sure that it's harder. Maybe, you know, SMTP is no longer it's going to be sunset in a few years. When it comes to like Microsoft services, they're recommending everybody go to a two-factor authentication of some sort, whether biometric or not. Well, what are some of the recommendations that you would make as default?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And this is where I will stray from being your conventional cybersecurity guest, which has a litany of things that are sounding more defensive in nature, because to me, I will answer the question, because there are some good best practices that you should just do regardless. It's like anything else. It's like good health. Like there's obvious stuff. Like right. I wouldn't recommend smoking filterless cigarettes, 6 times a day. Don't do that. That might help your lungs. you know, same equivalency here. But I will tell you this, and this is where it's interesting. I don't believe, and this is just personal, and this is not, you know, take it or leave it, whoever's listening. I don't believe that we're going to get any further in life these days, especially at the status and the level that the adversaries have gotten to, in a purely defensive position. I think that this idea that you can build a harder, taller, thicker wall, this castle moat strategy, has failed massively, because it's everything you guys already have alluded to, which is it's insider threat. It's stuff that manifests on the inside through social engineering methods. So you can have the most hardened server in the world, but Z, if you are the administrator of that server, it's hardened to everyone else except for you. But if they get to be you, it's accessible just like it was if it were unguarded at all. So the problem is that there's this mentality that, you know, generally speaking, broadly, that I can build a strong enough fortress that nothing is going to happen to me. And that's completely a wrong mentality. So I do believe you should have a fortress, because it'll keep the low-hanging fruit out, right? It'll keep the little skitties that are trying to hack in, you know, through the front door. You know, you don't need that. That's annoying. That's a kid trying to, you know, get some stripes or whatever. But when you're talking about something like an adversary that is really motivated, like the ransomware groups or the nation-state actors, which now are actively pursuing everyone, not just the big guys anymore, what you need there is a really, really good intelligence capability that understands what the landscape is, where this the storm is forming, what tempest is on its way in, so you can then be prepared, because you can't handle every beachhead in your organization typically all at once. Mm-hmm. It's like asking someone to be forever vigilant. It's impossible. You know, if I have a household that's big, I can't watch my front door and back door at the same time. Even if I have a whole staff of people, there's got to be people to sleep. You know, this is where people have the dream of AI eventually kicking in and being this forever vigilant thing. But the problem is, there's going to be good AI and there's going to be bad AI.
Skynet 2.0. So, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So I think where I'm going with this, and I kind of went around my elbow against my butt here, but, you know, definitely there are best practices that you could read literally on the first page of Google in the search. Great. There's definitely security technology that's been built that claims to have the ability to stop everything and, you know, has the means to be extremely up to speed on everything that's going on. But nothing will beat preemptive awareness. And then the second piece of this, which is where I get a little bit controversial, is being a damaging attack for the adversary. I have this podcast, one of them, it's like 7 podcasts ago, and it was literally entitled Sea Cucumber, Armadillo, or Porcupine. Which one are you? Because the sea cucumber defends itself by vomiting out its innards. So the predator will eat the innards and it'll like lurch away and try to grow those intestines back. That's its method to defend itself. It's like horrific, right? And I've actually told the US government, I'm like, we're a fucking sea cucumber. That's what we're doing. We're shoveling off our quantum and our method, our IP over to China, and we think we'll grow it back. We're not trying to make it a painful process for them to get it. Now, if you're a porcupine, they may still damage you and hurt you, but they're going to be really hurt in the process of doing it. So that's a lot of what my initiatives are with companies. It's not to go hack back. It's to become extremely damaging so the adversary basically moves on to someone less challenging than you.
Less of a risk.
Yes, lower hanging fruit for them. Because unfortunately, there's always someone that's not going to take those actions, which means you did, and you're now more in the safer space because the adversary is not going to risk taking a chance on you if you present a risk that you'll illuminate their entire operation, because then they lose everything. So you have to make it, you have to level the playing field in that way. And it's an asymmetric way of looking at it, but it's very rare, but it's starting to emerge. I'm one of the few folks out there in the industry that really advocates for this. It just gets convoluted with the offensive a lot. People think, oh, Kareem, you're all about hacking back. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm talking about being damaging to the adversary when they come for you. And that's a very different strategy than hacking back, so to speak, which is, you know, polarizing and trigger word for a lot of folks I'm probably listening right now.
Well, I definitely I want to ask about how you would make it, you know, hard for them to get a hold of.
Yeah.
But I also want to point out, or at least I want to mention that we know that China has many hands. I mean, even Zoom, as we're using, you know, they have their hands in it. Even things like if we know TikTok is a very big, if not the biggest platform for upcoming, you know, generation.
Discord.
Yeah.
Huge one.
And another one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's many
30% owned by Tencent. Yeah.
100%. Exactly. Yeah. So most of the things that people touch, especially the next generation, whether it be Roblox or others, you know, things that are very famous. And even in the gaming community, the kids are getting really adapted, really used to this environment that talks back and plays with. I mean, Epic Games was, you know, is one of the biggest companies in existence. And and it's software that's used for, you know, Hollywood media, the visual effects. That software also comes and is partly owned by Chinese companies that are invested into it. There's all these things that are happening. And again, there's like games that, you know, again, this is just the gaming piece of it, but games like Genshin.
It's a huge piece.
Yeah, Genshin Impact is a very popular game. It makes, you know, over 100 million a month. And that game comes straight from China. It has, and when you dive into the actual files in the game, you realize that it's scanning supposedly for, like, if you're hacking the game, but it's scanning in areas where there's nothing, there's no files that would, you know, impact the gameplay at all. So there's all these little things, and it may not be on, it may not be tracking it at all times, but the fact that it's in there, the fact that it's already seated in your computer, and, you know, again, if you don't have knowledge, intimate knowledge on how it works, and it's going to stay on there, and it might activate, you know, it might twilight whenever they want. So,
So to add to that Genshin Impact, apparently 2 days ago, there was an article that came out saying that hackers are using the anti-cheat system to disable antiviruses on phones.
So there's a bunch of
things. That's not a fun thing to be. No, like, if you, okay, so
they're all
obviously.
They're all jump pad pieces of software. So they're all able to, once that's in place, you can jump pad to something else. And maybe that, let's say, like, a congressman doesn't know anything about computers, but they're like, oh, you know, my granddaughter told me she wants to chat with me on TikTok, or they want me to use Zoom or whatever it is. Now you have a backdoor. Like, again, the easiest way to get to a system is through the person, the administrators, and the human element of it. If you can blackmail them because you found something on their phone, or because you found something, oh, you know what, this pharmaceutical company, we found all these records you were trying to bury in your server from 2006.
Or you can plant something on someone's phone. You know, you can put it there and then call them, 100%. You know, a pedophile or God knows what.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And their image is what they're most worried about these days, obviously, because that's what their brand recognition is all based off of around. So for you, again, I want to focus on how would you make it difficult? And then knowing that these things are in place, and I was kind of alluding to this earlier when I said there's a fear that, you know, for those people that don't know, there's always going to be a fear, but for someone that's already intimately involved, there's still a fear that it can happen to you. But how do you then give a solution to someone else who's in a position, vulnerable position?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll kind of talk about it in varying degrees, because smaller businesses just don't have the resources a larger enterprise can have. Now, the good news with smaller companies, and this is interesting, it's they have already reduced attack surface, right? They have very limited ways into their organization. If they have work from home employees, it's really just a number that's manageable, and they can bottleneck the communications in. So the key is to reduce this sprawling attack surface. That's the number one recommendation universally across all orgs, all governments. The bigger you are, the more vulnerable you are, because there's just too many conduits and access points and vectors in that an adversary can leverage.
Center west.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you think about something like gaming environments, they're classic for this because they have to be. They're massive multiplayer by definition. That's the terminology, for God's sake. So when you talk about that, you're talking about a huge amount, but they've been very, very adept at starting to silo and bottleneck the entrance in. Even if it's a giant pipe, they're still getting it in there where they can start scanning and deepak and inspectioning, expecting everything that's coming through. So that's a big part of the process, which is to corral and kind of herd traffic in such a way that you can manage it. Because that's usually where you saw bigger organizations fail. They had too many beachheads again to manage. The other area I would say that's interesting that hasn't been employed quite as much is everyone in the world, I think at this point, probably has heard the word antivirus, and they've heard the word firewall.
And VPN.
And VPN. Exactly. Oh my God, man. So I have a lot to talk about VPN in a minute. And it's not all good.
No, it's not. It's old. It's old technology, guys.
It is. I call it a hypodermic needle into an organization, where the syringe portion has a lot of garbage in it. So you may have a great protection going into the skin and nothing's going to get into the needle. But if you don't know what garbage is on one side of it, you don't know what garbage is coming out of the other side. And that's a big deal. That happened in a big way during the pandemic, because the work from home folks were dished out these VPNs. And then the funny part about it is they're like, I'm secure. The VPNs protect me. I'm like, they don't do shit for you at home, man.
Yeah.
That is purely a secure tunnel through the internet.
That's the biggest myth in like IT. That's the craziest thing.
Blows my mind. Yeah. So that was made me laugh a lot when I heard people talking about that. I'm like, man, you guys are so misinformed. But, you know, look, corporate leaders, you know, and I mean this with love to a lot of folks that are C-suite in the industry, they may not have as much practitioner experience. They read the marketing materials. They sell it. Yeah. And they just sell the same marketing garbage they were fed to everyone that they're now responsible for. So
we also are practitioners. So
yeah, exactly. And there's fewer of us out there than there were even 10 years ago now in the grand scheme of things. You know, my company that I sold, and this will resonate with folks that know the industry a little, but I sold my company to a company called Mandiant in 2012. And Mandiant in 2012 was the, like, it was a legendary firm. It was the most famous company for handling things like incident response. When there was a hack, this is the group that would come in and manage the remediation. And they do it very carefully. We wouldn't go in like a bull in a china shop. We'd go in there and tell everyone, don't turn anything off, don't unplug anything. Because if you do that, you're going to cause a smash and grab by the adversary. They're going to now know we're there, and they're going to make it even worse. And so people...
Run away with the chicken.
Exactly. So there's just a lot of, like, art, to your point about doing this, that's kind of lost. So I think, yeah, and it's something that's sad but gone. So Z, I think attack surface analysis and reduction is a hugely, hugely powerful thing, because if you can be able to have a monitoring of an environment through a certain area, which takes me to my second point, which is continuous monitoring. Today, the general standard is, let me go pen test my environment quarterly. Maybe if you're really sophisticated, you do it monthly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And pen tests, to your point, are an analysis of vulnerabilities that can be patched. So you're looking for something that maybe is out of date, or maybe has had a flaw introduced that needs to be up, you know, changed or whatever. That's all wonderful. But that's, again, not someone social engineering me or Void or Z for our credentials that then allow them to be like us lurking around within the environment. There's no vulnerability in the world that gets leveraged. That we are the vulnerability, the human is. So I think that the second part of my conversation is continuous monitoring of active compromise in your environment. If you can stop looking for things trying to get in and start looking for things trying to call out that are not you, that's how you're going to catch something a lot more rapidly. So the problem is, the general consensus has been looking at what's hammering on your wall from the outside. There needs to be a mental shift and a paradigm shift saying, okay, we'll do that, but what is trying to leave my environment that's not actually authorized? I'm telling you, the minute I tell people turn on egress rules on your IDS, old school shit, you won't believe what lights up. You won't believe what lights up. And all of a sudden they're like, oh my God. And then they're like, holy shit, this shit's already in here. Yeah, it's already in here. You're already compromised. You're not vulnerable. You're compromised. That's a whole different ballgame. And so, unfortunately, my narrative, which we're talking about now, doesn't land very well with a lot of these corps, because they're like, you're really introducing a hell of a lot of work. We have to spend a lot of money to do this that we don't have. And then thirdly, where are we going to get the talent to be able to execute on this kind of thing? So I'm unfortunately sharing realities that are very hard to actually do in many cases, right? Because you need a certain amount of technology and talent to leverage that. But it is what you would do to answer your question thoroughly, to really be something that might actually, if a threat or an adversary knew you were doing that kind of work, they're going to leave you alone. They don't want to risk getting caught. They rather just move on to someone who's not doing that. So I believe the deterrence is your best possible weapon in this case. Less so actual fix and forget big red button that does this like magical firewall that stops it. It doesn't exist.
It takes forever to even implement a sophisticated attack like that.
So knowing that
absolutely right,
that some of the best fixes are analyzing what you already have, taking proper inventory of your systems, of your actual employees, and everything else, and that's a great way to fix it. Now, speaking about larger looming threats of other governments and other, you know, experts that spend their time hacking, that's what they do. They learn code, they learn vulnerabilities in it. And some of them even sell that new code as like, this is a new protection, but they always have the back door key.
That's right.
So when this happens and the community, the hacking community, those that are doing pen testing, those that are involved are made aware of it. I know that always governments, laws take years to catch up to the knowledge that is at the point today, right? They're the consumer while everyone else is the ones that are producing and developing. So knowing that mm-hmm. we have clear ideas of like, this is a big threat that's coming from an outside, you know, government. There's only so much we can do before it becomes a conflict issue. How would a group then present these ideas to the government? Again, and most of them aren't even aware how technology works. They're barely sending emails, or mm-hmm. they have their own private email server or something, you know? And then, you know, again, issues occur.
Yeah.
So how would you do that? How would the group present those kind of like warnings to them early on?
Yeah, fantastic question, and perfect, because it gives me the opportunity to also talk about the proverbial divide between private and government work, you know, and people that maybe, again, back to your original conversation around folks that may be interested in getting in this, do they go and join the military or ultimately go into the government, you know, in some intelligence community company or three letter of some kind, and become, you know, an ethical hacker or, you know, which there are, right? We all know various reasons why. Now here's the challenge here. There's always been a divide first between the various divisions of the government to begin with. There's the joke there that there's this wall between all the intelligence services and law enforcement. They don't share information. They don't share intel. They're terrible at it. They've been trying to fix that for 30 years now, right? I mean, I remember each project and how they've declassified over the years.
2001 is when they started that project.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's been so many of them that were attempted. One of the most famous ones was called Einstein. And it was meant to be a stove piping of all the intelligence services, intelligence feeds into one, again, talking about bottlenecking data into one, you know, central data lake. Never worked. I mean, they built it, but it didn't get fed very well. Everyone wants to hold on to their own little intelligence, right? And that's a big problem. So when you start introducing private, which have a hell of a lot of interesting data and intelligence, into being able to cooperate with the government, historically, it's been one directional. I will deliver what I found to an LE group, like call it the FBI, for example, or in my case, I'll deliver directly to an intelligence community, three-letter agency of some kind, depending on the nature of it, the nation state or national security threat, or at least I feel like it might be. I give it to them. And believe me when I tell you this, it goes into the abyss and never am I hear about it again. Never do I know what happened. Man. And I get why. So I want to be clear. I can appreciate the nature of why, for the reasons that Void was talking about with the Ukraine situation. You can't let people get a little too cavalier and turn into their own version of Batman because people want to and they feel very justified. And in some cases it's admirable, because I do have a lot of friends that are on the hacktivist side of the business, and they have they do very good things for like child trafficking. They illuminate a lot of horrible stuff out there that, frankly, law enforcement doesn't have the time or the resources for. So I love those guys. I think that they may be a little on the edge. They may be more gray than maybe white. But I like that, because I think that actually does a good thing for the community. Take it or leave it. I'm sure I'm pissing off a lot of my government friends when I say that. But hey, look, if you can save one kid from something horrible happening to them, I think that's a wonderful thing to do, right? It's a good Samaritan, in my opinion. That's good citizenry. But the problem is that there's no good bi-directional communication between government and private sector. And the other problem, which is very interesting, very, very interesting, I hire a lot of folks that are legit either hackers that maybe they were on the very edge of going, to your point, to a dark side because there was more money and allure to that. But I introduced them to a startup I create or something along those lines, where I'm like, look, you can make something maybe not quite as much as that, but you can sleep at night. If you have a family, you're not worried about them getting hauled off, or, you know, I'm able to incentivize them to say, you can still leverage your incredible skill set in a way that's good and allows you to have a career rather than some sort of situation where you have to go to non-extradition countries to live in. It's just a miserable existence, even if you have all the money in the world. So I'm able to hire that way. The government can't do that. The government needs Boy Scouts that have never done anything wrong in their entire lives. And frankly, with all due respect to those guys that have clearances, they can't think like the adversary. Because if you've been a Boy Scout your entire life, how are you going to come up with the methodologies these guys are going to employ? You can't dream of it because you've never even conceived of it. So I think
it's
that
the same pattern you have. Like, right, you could do everything to deter threat, but that's just still going to happen.
Yeah.
But they're all in the box thinkers, and that's exactly what you don't want when it comes to protecting and attacking. That's exactly what you don't want. You'll know exactly what they're going to do in every step of the way. That's just horrible.
Right. And what I'll say is this, because, you know, I'm kind of sound like I'm berating a job in the government or, you know, at the NSA at Tailored Access. Or, no, I think there's a place for everyone. And if you're one of those people that needs a huge construct around you, you have a very specific task and you need to be compartmentalized away from what the guy in the next cubicle is doing, and you function well that way, and you're not a all round all-star player type, you just want to get your job done. Fantastic. The government is the best place in the world for you. And you can do something, you can do one thing really well, go do it there, right? But if you're going to join something like what we do, you're kind of an all-round, like I know all about IT, OT, IoT, firmware hacks that have malware that embed themselves in devices like my Nest thermostat or my Tesla, man. You know, those are things that you go ask an average everyday, you know, government offensive operator wouldn't know the first thing about that, unless that was his area of specialty, right? So I think what's interesting here is that for different folks, for different strokes, again, private sector is introducing a huge amount of opportunity. And now lately, I will tell you this, in the last like 2 years, 3 years, they're giving us a lot more latitude to say, all right, what do you guys know out there? Because we're not getting the intel that we need as a government. We have all the resources in the world, but we can't actually leverage it because people know, see us coming. The government's very lumbering and not very stealthy. I can go in as a businessman to Thailand and broker a deal with a ISP there that the government would never be able to do without noise, without warrants and subpoenas and all that. And I can get intelligence a lot more quickly and more rapidly because I'm doing it in a business capacity. So it's really interesting ways to look at the problem, because we can be very, very effective if they would allow us the latitude to do things. I'm not talking about allowing us to hack back, just to be clear for the folks that still believe I'm some sort of massive offensive guy. I believe in a certain amount of that, but I do believe that there has to be something that threatens the adversary. Because right now, there is absolutely no compunction for those nation state actors to come and get what we have. Yeah. They believe they are owed it if we don't protect it. Seriously.
I always thought of, like, you know, there's software out there. There's the Ryuk virus. There's Pegasus. There's all these systems that can definitely be used. And a lot of them, I mean, the more you dig into it, you can kind of see that the ones that write these type of software, it's very similar. Either they copied and pasted, or it's the same person making it, or the same group of people.
But, absolutely right.
But if you used it against the adversaries preemptively, hey, you know what, man? I just want you to know now that we're sitting face to face, I know that you have this in your phone right now, and I know these emails were sent out before this meeting. I think you should go back to your government and you should let them know that we need to find a way that we can work together. Otherwise, this is going to get really ugly. Maybe that's too straightforward. That's way too, like, off top of your head, aggressive, but there needs to be some kind of, like, seeming respect between two governments to be able to lay off of each other, but know that we have the knives ready to go in case something were to happen. Right now, it seems like we're lumbering, like you said, and when you have excellent, you know, hackers with excellent credentials and a clean history, I feel like those are the easiest people to blackmail. Those are the easiest people to turn around and hyper. Maybe they spend too much time on a certain, you know, social media platform. You can make them, oh my God, what's the word? You can hyper
blackmail.
You can activate them and make them into, like, you know what? Now I start to believe in these social movements, and I need to expose information which maybe does need to be exposed. But now you're putting everything at risk as well. I think, like what Edward Snowden did, I think he was 100% like correct to do that. But now you have laws in place because of him, because they want to stop people from doing that. So it puts him in a position where now you can't even ethically, you know, really be responsible in a responsible way, allude to information that's happening, because some, you know, you're facing jail sentences.
You're right.
You're facing something.
You know, I get questions. I used to. It's quieted down quite a bit over the last few years about Snowden. You know, what my feelings are being, you know, in the community tied to that, where you're privy to certain information and intelligence and all that. You know, and look, I definitely see a couple sides to this coin. There's a lot of things. Remember the movie Gladiator, where the famous line where he goes, "Rome is the mob." I love that line. Yeah. Because that's so true, man. You know, people as a collective are really, really challenging to manage. I mean, this is the issue that the government fundamentally has. And this is not me advocating for government or defending them for why they maybe do stupid shit. But I will tell you that they do have some valid reasons for why certain raw intelligence shouldn't be shared with the general population because they just can't handle it, man. So I think what's interesting about this is a dichotomy because we all want ultimate privacy and we want ultimate security, and we just can't have both. There's a certain level of give and take that way. And I think this holds true with businesses, to your point, Z, about again, when I was younger and I was a consultant in the early 2000s, and I was extremely full of piss and wind about, you need to take security so seriously. It's the most important thing in the world. And I had a CEO that didn't know the first thing about it. And he said something that actually impacted me. And it was really fascinating. He goes, son, listen, he goes, I really appreciate your fever pitch here. And you're really passionate about this, I can tell. And I think you mean well for what you're trying to tell me. And I was pissed when he's telling me this, right? Because I was like, you're shooting me
Agitated.
down, and you're. But what he said next was interesting. He said, but what you're suggesting I do will shut down my business operations to where the company will fail. It will literally put me in such a closed box and slow my velocity down so much. He didn't say it this way, I'm paraphrasing. He said, it'll slow my velocity down so much that I just won't even be able to run. He said, so I have to decide what risk tolerance I'm willing to take on. He was very, then he sharpened up and actually it stuck with me because I'm like, shit. And I've actually measured my approach now a lot more to say that's a risk that we have to take in order to operate versus saying that there's a 100% way, because there's a 100% way to secure yourself. Close all the windows, close all the doors, no air, no light, death. That's 100% security. Right. And I tell my, younger consultants that have the same kind of, extreme passion around it, that story, because we get so wrapped up in our own mission that you forget that there's other missions
There's
like
other
operations.
priorities out there.
And it's hard because it takes time to get there.
The more security you have, the less freedom you'll get. The more freedom you ask for, the less security you can have. It's a trade-off that people is as old as
Right
time.
on.
But I mean, again, like when the government makes these laws that make it harder for hackers to exist in certain spaces, I feel like it also makes things very difficult for more people to want to get into that industry. And maybe those that are in the industry will be like, you know what? I feel like these guys are becoming my enemy now because they're willing to kill me if I do my job. So now
So
I'm gonna
just
do
to add on that onto that bit, because I've been doing IT for what, 12 years at this point, and I've done MSP work, did security audits, pen testing, all that stuff. And let me tell you, it's so again back to the there's no training, there's no support to what Z was saying, right? Like, and these laws make it sound scary, right? To do something against others, the laws are there to protect everyone's identity. But again, you're there to learn. There's ways to learn, right? And there's ways to get this experience up front. And no matter how hard you try, you might do it the wrong way just because there's that allure, right? Like, oh, I can break into someone's Wi-Fi. Yes, you can go world driving, go around the neighborhood, break into many Wi-Fis as you can, but that's all illegal compared to, all right, let me test it by my own equipment and having to do that. That's a home lab scenario, and that costs money. And yes, that's the best way to learn. I 100% agree with that because that's how I learned. I worked at a computer shop. He's like, here's all this equipment, have fun breaking in, hacking like that. I got free rein to do that, and I learned so much of it doing that. And just and all I wanted to know really was how the potential of an individual being hacked. Back then, it was a lot less. Not everyone was doing it. It wasn't as interesting or profitable. Nowadays, we have ransomware as a service platforms. In other words, there are people who create this BitLocker. Oh, hey, your computer's been locked out. You can't unzip it without the code, but the code you have to call. Well, they didn't want to call people directly either, but they're getting paid, so they set it up as a service. They have a customer service line where they can convert the BitLocker or the Bitcoin for you. And there's all this streamlined because it is such a big industry. Back then, not a problem. You get away with it. I'm gonna erase my computer. There's nothing on there. Nowadays, having your information, is a lot more relevant in terms of selling it. That's why people pay for it. And it's a scary thing.
And Dargo, you got something interesting you said that I think is salient here to bring up. There's still this perception that the threat is this blue-haired hoodie kid in a dark base, like the visuals you see from Hollywood, right? Or you go to Flip Art and you look for hacker. That's what most people still think that is. But what it really is, like we talked about the ransom, you talked about ransomware as a service group. You mentioned the help desks. I actually have the I call it a luxury. I don't know. I had the opportunity to sit in on a call with a negotiator talking to the help desk about how to bring the ransom down with and it was a 4-day thing. And man, let me tell you, you know how nice that help desk was? I wish American Express would hire that help desk because it was so much better. They were nice. They're like, oh, thank you for calling. Can I help you set up a wallet? If you're not sure how, let me speak in perfect English and take your time. No worries. Yeah, just do that. Okay, now use your credit card or other credit card, you know, wire funds, and then this will be transferred into this. Explain the process. You know, can I call back? Call me back anytime you need the help. I'm like, what? So, you know, what's funny about it is that there's entire enterprise ecosystems on the bad guy side. These are people that have bonuses. They're employees of the month. They have all this set up now. It's just like this. It's just like the good guy side. It's on the other side. And they didn't feel like they're anything bad because it's just a business for them.
They're not getting paid because they're doing the illegal object. They're just the help desk, yeah. Right?
They're only as good as they
want
to be.
Well, I mean, honestly, would you want to talk to someone angry? That's not going to help. You already have them captured, so it's more like you're going to come to me anyways. If they start gouging you for more, that's also illegal. So they know not to do that. Because now they will be involved in
it. The best meat comes from a calm and happy cow. All right, you don't want them stuck.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't do that. Well, those are the points.
True.
Imagine, I think most people, the best people at their job don't want to be tied to a job, right? They'd rather be free agents that are able to be hired from place to place rather than being stuck handing a report every day at 9 a.m. to some person behind a desk. You want to be free to be able to work with different companies, work on different things, and improve your skills rather than stagnate. But when you have like people that are like that, they're going to cost more. And again, when you're talking about a company who knows that this is a potential danger, just like a pharmaceutical company knows that this medicine can be potentially deadly, they're like, well, we'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. Right now, there's still more, you know, profit to be made. I think once the cleanup happens, that's an issue that no hacker, nobody wants to deal with. I mean, the money's there maybe, but again, what can be done in order to entice younger talent to it? Because when you have talent that's young, usually they already come with, you know, they come with an idea, a set of ideas that they might not want to bend the knee, or they don't want to work for somebody and bend the knee. I'm over here talking about Game of Thrones, but yeah. I know when you're working for somebody, why would you want to do that when you know your skills can grow and your potential earnings can grow by just being free agents? How do you have them? Hey, you should sit down and work for this company.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. This is why the government's failing so miserably at luring people in. As sexy as they might make their marketing message and their advertisements that make it look like they're going to be, you know, an Avenger superhero, you know, it's hard because people are smarter than that. What I do, and I'll just speak for myself again, and you know, some of my colleagues in the startup world where we have friends and we already have a buildup of folks that can kind of speak to the credibility, which is helpful, right? So they're all of a sudden they're like, look, you know, you're going to be doing this kind of work if you go work for Kareem at Prevalion or wherever else, you know, I start up, or you're going to go work for so-and-so and this is the kind of work they're going to do. What is interesting to you? Big thing, you said it very, very, very well. You have to make the lifestyle as close to being a free agent as it would be if they were on their own, but they have the top cover of a somewhat large organization, like a startup that's well-funded. They also have the potential for fame and notoriety of being someone that actually sells and exits to some bigger company. And all of a sudden now they've got a reputational, like myself, you know, when I sold my company in 2012, I became a golden child for venture capital and people were throwing money at me, even if I didn't even have a project. And I was like, I don't even have anything I want to do. You know, I'm throwing them, you know, they're like, here's a term sheet. If you got something good, I'm like, this is absurd. Now, of course, times changed. Now it's really hard. Just present times included, you know, the economy is really in a wacky place. That you have a cure for cancer, venture capital is going to have a tough time giving you money. But I'm just telling you that when you can build a credibility up and become someone that was think about if you were the very first chief marketing officer at Facebook. There's only one first chief marketing officer at Facebook. Do you know how many other social media companies would hire you for whatever blank check amount you asked for because you were supposedly, even if you did nothing, and it was just right time, right place, and opportunity led. You were still that title in that environment. So if I hire a threat hunter that's a senior threat hunter in Prevalion, and we sell the company to some big company and there's a big, you know, PR blitz that this happened, that individual is now headhunted the rest of their lives in a good way. They get picked off one place to the next. So that's usually how I do it. I'm like, look, you can become renowned in the dark circles, or you can become renowned in the illuminated circles. And I'll tell you what, you might make more money in the darker realms of the world, possibly, because it's tax-free in theory. It's not really, but you're now running, because I mentioned the government being lumbering and slow.
I think I lost him. Kareem, can you hear us?
No. Okay. I can. Sorry. It disconnected for a second. Apologize.
No problem.
That's okay.
So you're saying that the government is lumbering and slow, but you're getting to that point.
Yeah, but they have unlimited time and essentially resources to eventually find you while you don't.
Yeah.
You know, you could have Elon Musk may have all the money in the world, but if he eventually steps in the wrong way, he can't go or live on an airplane the rest of his life and avoid a government eventually. I mean, he could, but you know what I mean? You're now limiting, you're pinning yourself into a corner of where you can really be.
Your life experiences, your life, everything has been cut down from what you're able to do. Your freedoms are gone to a certain degree. You can dodge the IRS for so long, you know, but eventually when they get those records, they're going to call you up, and then that's an awkward conversation.
That's it.
Yeah.
So that's exactly
for
it.
A company like Prevalion, right? Or Prevalion, when you have that, and obviously you work with so many different companies, sometimes two competitor companies might hire the same hacking company or the same, you know, penetration company. Have you ever had those awkward conversations between two CEOs saying, hey, I know that they picked up a contract with you too. How much can we pay you for? We want to know what their, you know, quarter's looking like ahead of their financial results. You're like, we don't do that.
Yeah.
Then, but well, if you don't do that, we'll go with someone else. Because what if you tell them ours? Like, how do you keep the trust between two companies that are rivals and you're still the middleman between, you know, the protection, their services?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. And actually, it's a really good segue from what we were talking about with hiring fresh talent that may be freshly off a little bit of a darker side of the equation. Their moral compass is still being created. So you have to be very careful about those types of situations, because all of a sudden they're put in a seat of extreme power. I'll speak for myself. I get those questions a lot, because they'll say, you clearly have an immense amount of access to information. And we'd love to be able to get our hands on that so it can give us a win, and we'll pay you handsomely for it. And you have to make a judgment call at that point. I had a really good, podcast episode with a friend of mine. You guys, I recommend having a chat with him if you can get a hold of him. His name is R Snake. That's his hacker handle. Robert Hansen. He's the co-founder of White Hat Security. Just a great guy. He's really much more of a vulnerability pen tester type. Void, you appreciate him for you've done the similar kind of work there. He does that at an incredible scale. I'm more of a malware threat espionage, cyber espionage guy. So we have a lot of good fun stories together. But we've been propositioned, for lack of a better term, by groups that were slightly unethical or more than slightly unethical. And we had to make judgment calls very, very quickly, or know where we stood in the situation before that happened. Because my point here is that, look, they could lay a blank check in front of me and I'm a human being. I'm going to look at that and be like, wow. Mm-hmm. And then I have to think about exactly what I just said, which is I will then have a momentary period with some extremely fun leisure times, and I can go hang out with these crazy morons with lemurs and fur coats on yachts in Saint-Tropez. But then I got to eventually come home, right? Because I've got, look, you know, I'm an older guy, I'm wife and kids. I'm not, you know, I have a reality that I know is going to come calling. And the other problem with this is that you endanger everyone around you when you do something stupid like that. So yeah, it's about maintaining that moral compass, because you're right. This is the business, hearkening the very beginning of our conversation about cybersecurity being interesting. It's one of the few areas in this world that positions you in a place, if you're talented like this, to have to make those judgment calls. And I urge folks that are on the edge of making those calls to think about what you'll lose when the money does run out, because you eventually have to come calling.
Yeah. And to add like a final note to that statement, probably about two decades ago, this was not a profitable business.
That's absolutely right.
It was dead. It was new. It was unfounded. nowadays you can make a good living from it. So people, if you're like, oh, I don't know what I want to do, understand that it's acceptable in society. Be like, oh, I'm a cybersecurity analyst. Perfect. Boom. Let's get you on that chart. It's respectable because, again, security is a big thing. Cyber, anything, cyber information, cyber technology, all of that is tied to that. It's like, you are a respectable member of society. And I know it doesn't sound glamorous, but once you get into the roots of it and learn it, like, because you're passionate of it, you'll understand that this isn't just an average job. It's a little high end. It's a lot more thorough, right? It's probably got the same level, I would say, as a doctor or an engineer, but it's just a different type of field. And now it honestly, it looks good if you have that as a career. So back then I would say, not so much. Nowadays, obviously the government's listening, private companies are listening, they're like, oh, we want some of this. And you don't want to be like, well, it didn't sound cool. I'm going to tell you right now, it is fun. Okay. On top of just, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Like, oh, I break into things. No, it's fun to do, fun to learn, fun to talk about it. But it is, again, it's if you know you can get into this, now's a good time. Obviously, and going forward, it's going to be a good time anyways, because the demand for this is just going to get so much more higher. Obviously, people are going to get paid for this. Now that the government's throwing in more money for resources and education, jump on. Guys, today, what's the worst that's going to happen? You learn something new that's worthwhile to you in the future. It's going to help you in the long run, always.
You better not be trying to learn the podcast. You better be careful. You're trying to get like headhunter
or what? No. I like where I'm at. Okay. I like helping people in my community, so I'll stay here.
All right, good. Well, Kareem, we're very fortunate to have this opportunity to talk to you. I'm sad that we didn't get a chance to get into, like, what does a hacker like you do to, like, relieve stress? What do you do in order to, like, improve your skills? Like, there's so many areas that we didn't get a chance to talk to, but I hope we can have a conversation with you in the future. Again, you know, founder, CEO of Prevalion, the host and creator of the Introverted Iconoclast podcast and system. That Twitter page is amazing. I know that you recommended the R Snake podcast episode, which was on June 5th. I'm going to lay that in the description too. For those that are listening, they can just go there and then begin listening to that. Pause this, go there, please listen, learn, and get yourself educated on the threats that are out there and the ways to protect yourself and, you know, family members as well. Cause you know, at the end of the day, it affects everybody.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I very much appreciate it once again. Any final words, any way to get in contact other than the links that we'll have in the description below? Anything you'd like to say?
No, absolute pleasure being here, guys. Really good conversation. Seriously, we got into some areas I rarely get a chance to dig into. So thank you for that. Really, it was a lot of fun. And it's more nitty gritty what people want to hear. So I think this is one of the better ones as far as we're getting into topics that people should talk about more. They're uncomfortable for a lot of folks to talk about because it feels like, oh, we're treading in territory that shouldn't be there. But I think, you know, to echo everything you both have said, I think people that are contemplating a career in this are in for an incredibly interesting life, right? This only gets more sophisticated and challenging going forward. So, you know, anyone that's sitting like in a cubicle right now that, you know, is just kind of questioning their life and want to have a little bit more of that wild, fortune and glory experience, there is absolutely a path to it with this industry. And I think they're welcome to get a hold of me through the channels that you're going to provide in the links. Other than that, it was a wonderful chat and I look forward to an encore conversation when the time's right.
Definitely. Not so technical.
Absolutely.
Not so technical next time.
Yes, definitely.
Not so technical. Thank you so much. You have a good one. Thank you so much for listening, guys.